Let's cultivate our motivation. So while compassion and being of benefit is a strong value for us, compassion doesn't mean always being sweet, and it doesn't mean that you're a pushover. It means that at whatever circumstance you're in, you do what is going to be for the long-term benefit, and hopefully short-term benefit too, of whoever is in front of you. So we have to weigh many, many factors in being of benefit to others. You know, what can they tolerate? What do they need at that moment that's going to help them? Because sometimes what people think they need is not what's going to help them. It involves releasing all wish for praise or appreciation afterwards, and sometimes even risking our reputation to do what is going to be best. So while we contemplate the kindness of others and the dukkha they endure to help us cultivate compassion, there's a lot of other qualities we also need to cultivate and be able to act with compassion. Because compassion has a certain strength to it, and we need to build up that strength and confidence. And when you think that the final goal of our great compassion is going to lead to generation of bodhicitta, which will lead us to attain Buddhahood, then we really see how much strength and confidence are required to actualize that motivation. So let's have the confidence now that we can develop that great kind of confidence that the bodhisattvas have and develop their inner strength and clear wisdom. And attain Buddhahood so that we can most effectively be of great benefit to all living beings. And so listening to the teachings, spending the day contemplating the Dharma, is a luxury cruise in fulfilling that motivation. So several people missed yesterday afternoon's teaching, which was coincidentally the qualities of a qualified disciple. Funny how that was the teaching that so many people missed. So, I think you need to watch the video and read the text. And I'll just remind you of the 3 and 5 points that His Holiness mentioned. Okay, there's other lists that contain, you know, a more detailed explanation of a good disciple. But Aryadeva in the 400 explained 3 qualities for somebody who's going to be able to realize emptiness. The first one was being open-minded. Yeah, so, you know, being able to hear different ideas without freaking out and feeling that they threaten you. And then that leads to the second one, being intelligent, so that you can examine all those ideas using reasoning and logic and really see with your own wisdom what makes sense and what doesn't make sense. And that often means going beyond what feels comfortable to us emotionally. Yeah. In talking with many people over the years, I can see that very often what we believe is what makes us feel comfortable on an emotional level. Yeah, and we don't really want to question that. I'll give you an example of that. One woman, I think her mother or father died, and she came to see me, and she was saying, you know, Buddhism isn't very comforting when a dear one dies, because you have to think of them being reborn according to their karma, and actually it's so much nicer thinking of them going to heaven. Yeah? As you can see, isn't it? It's nicer, you know? Oh, there's God, kind of big daddy, and you go to heaven, and God takes care of everything, and, you know, there's angels, and yeah, you're with your family again, and but this time everything's nice. You know, it's much more comforting than thinking about somebody being reborn according to their karma when you knew that person well and you could see their good qualities and their good karma, but you also are very aware of their difficulties and the negative karma they created. Yeah. So she was, you know, this woman who told me this was kind of bordering, well, you know, it's nice to believe in God and the Christian view and, you know, somebody I care about dies. Yeah. So what this quality of being intelligent about is being not falling prey to what feels comfortable on an emotional level, because the truth isn't what feels comfortable on the emotional level. Yeah, the truth is not what pleases our ego, because our self-grasping ignorance, our ego, is our enemy. And so, you know, the real enemy that's the cause of our problem. So pleasing it and giving it what it likes is not going to liberate us from it. It's going to get us more ensnared. So we need that factor of intelligence that's willing to really think of the teachings and question them and, figure out what, you know, how do things really exist? So that's the second quality. The third quality is being interested, being sincere, being eager. In other words, from our side, we want to learn this. We're going towards the Dharma. If we don't have that quality of being sincere in our practice, if we're just doing it because we think we should or because our friend does, it's not going to work. Okay? You get some benefits. Seeds get planted in the mind. But really, to gain the realizations from our side, there has to be this interest and eagerness. Okay. And then there were two additional qualities. So one was having respect and veneration for the teacher and for the teaching. And so that makes sense, because if you're going to follow something, you know, you better venerate it. Yeah, if you think it's a bunch of garbage, you're not going to follow it, okay? And so really having that attitude, and that veneration, that respect, comes from learning and understanding the teaching. You know, it's not something you can say, I should respect. Yeah, I venerate it. What are they saying? This is too much. No, it doesn't come from trying to make ourselves, have respect for something. It comes because we've learned it and we see the value, and then the respect and the veneration automatically comes. At least that's my opinion. And my experience too, having tried to make myself have faith and tried to make myself, you know, feel a lot of things that I should feel. It's become quite obvious to me that what I feel has to depend on understanding and on wisdom, you know, not in telling myself I should or shouldn't. Okay, and then the next quality was wanting to follow the instructions. Okay, so the teachings, the teacher give us instructions, and so being open to follow them. So even if we can't practice everything at once, yeah, because some things are more advanced than we're ready for at the moment, still, you know, holding them in our mind, knowing that we'll get to them, but then practicing what we're able to practice right now. Okay, so really engaging. Yeah, engaging. We're not a spectator. Okay, we're not a spectator, doing an academic study on what Buddhists believe and how they practice. Okay, you know, we're not doing that. We're not going to publish a paper on traditional Buddhist practice and how people go about it. We're going to do it ourselves. Okay, so really engaging. We get a lot of requests for people who want to write papers and do research and make videos and things like that. And it's funny because you want to help the people and you realize that, you know, what they do could influence other people and it could influence them, and maybe this is their gateway to the Dharma. But, who wants to be studied? You know, like you're a fish in a fishbowl. Yeah. And who wants to do things just so somebody can write a paper? One of my Dharma friends commented to me one time that she's, because of doing this and, you know, talking and, you know, because many people want information, and rather than look it up and read it themselves, they contact you expecting you to, you know, just give them a private teaching. And so she said she's written more term papers and more dissertations than she can remember. Yeah, by helping all these other people, including the one she wrote for her own PhD. Okay. So those are the qualities that we want to cultivate as a good student. And as I mentioned yesterday, these are qualities that we can build up ourselves intentionally. So it's not a question of, you know, you're born with them or you're not. They're qualities that you emphasize that you want to train your mind in. So I think it's good, your afternoon discussion, really go over these qualities and brainstorm how can you train your mind in these qualities. Yeah, and see what you come up with, because I think everybody thinking collectively about this, you can come up with some very good ideas that will help everybody in their practice. Okay, so chapter 4 was about the importance of spiritual mentors, the qualities of the three types of mentors, and the qualities of a good disciple. Then chapter 5 is relying on spiritual mentors. So how actually do we go about relying on them? How do we create a good relationship? Okay, that will benefit us in our Dharma practice. Okay, so as Holiness says, at present, we have a precious human life, complete with access to the Dharma teachers and teachings. This is something we often don't really appreciate. Having access to teachers and teachings. When I first met the Dharma, you know, back in the olden days when I had to walk 3 miles in the snow to school, I had to go halfway around the world to get teachings. I couldn't just drive a half an hour to the Dharma Center. Or take a plane ride to a Dharma Center. I had to go exactly halfway around the world. Okay, so appreciating that the teachers and teachings are available to us. One of my friends, Alex Berzin, before the Soviet Union broke up, he was teaching in a lot of the Soviet countries. And actually, I went there after the Berlin Wall fell. But he was there before. And he was telling me that, like in Prague, Czechoslovakia, what they would do is, because they would have to meet at people's flats, and not everybody could arrive at the same time, because that would be suspicious. So one person arrived at one time and somebody else 15 minutes later and somebody else by another route, you know, sometime after that. And the flats were small, but the person's home where they gathered, there was a living room and a bedroom. So what they did is in the living room, they set up a table with cards as if they were playing a card game. And then they went in the bedroom and had the teachings. And in case the police knocked on the door, they could run out to the living room, sit down, and be playing cards. Yeah. So there they were, trying to get teachings, with the fear of the police coming and arresting you. So we often don't appreciate what it's like, you know. I mean, we're sitting here this morning. Is anybody afraid of the police coming and busting us? Now, of course, I say that this morning they will. But we have freedom of assembly. We have freedom of religion. This fortunate situation came about due to great merit that we created in previous lives. Not wanting to waste the efforts of our previous lives, we should take advantage of this rare opportunity by learning and practicing the Dharma. If we are too busy to attend Dharma teachings while both we and our teachers are alive, we may later regret having lost the chance. In a Pali Sutra, there is the story of a spirit who had full confidence in Bhikkhuni Sukha and lamented that the people of Rajgira did not take advantage of the teachings she gave. Even though a large assembly was present at the teaching, he was eager for more beings to benefit, and so he went around the town of Rajgira chanting. And so this is how they advertise the teachings in the time of the Buddha. Look how what he said. What has happened to these people in Rajgir? They sleep as if they've been drinking mead. Why don't they attend Ansukha as she teaches the deathless state? But the wise, as it were, drink it up, that Dharma irresistible. Ambrosial, nutritious, as travelers do a cloud. Okay, so he didn't pull any punches. The Dharma teachings are more life-sustaining than ordinary food and drink. The more we imbibe the Dharma, the more joy fills our minds and hearts. With this in mind, we now turn our attention to how to cultivate a good relationship with our spiritual mentors, the ones who kindly instruct us on the path. Okay, so then the first thing is the benefits of relying on the spiritual mentors. Very often in the teachings, they first talk about the benefits of doing something and the advantages of not doing it, disadvantages of not doing it. Okay, so this is kind of, the Buddhist advertising. If you don't get this laundry detergent, all your clothes are going to be scruffy looking. If you do get it, they are going to glitter and your husband will love you. Okay. So, the disadvantages and the advantages. So some people translate the term Shenyan Tenpa as guru devotion. This English term may be misleading, evoking the image of blindly surrendering to a holy authority figure, which is certainly not the intended meaning. Shenyan means spiritual friend or spiritual mentor. Tenpa means to rely or depend on. For our Dharma practice to be successful, we must properly rely on a wise and compassionate spiritual mentor and guide. Before engaging in any activity, it's helpful to know the advantages of doing so and the disadvantages of not doing so or of doing it improperly. Many benefits accrue from properly relying on a spiritual mentor or mentors. It's like I said yesterday, we can have more than one. Okay, so first, our thoughts and our words will become virtuous because we will follow our spiritual mentor's wise advice. Okay, so this is from properly relying on a spiritual mentor. This is not from having a spiritual mentor, because we can have a spiritual mentor without properly relying on them. Okay? But if we rely on them, our thoughts and words will become virtuous because we will follow their wise advice. Okay? For the same reason, following their advice, we won't bring suffering on ourselves or others. Okay? Because we'll abandon what needs to be abandoned on the path. We will complete the two collections of merit and wisdom and attain full awakening by following reliable teachings. We will be able to work for the benefit of sentient beings, including those who have entered wrong paths. So we don't give up on people who have entered wrong paths. Okay? We help them as much as we can, but without having an agenda and without getting despondent if they don't do what we want them to do, which is a common trait of sentient beings. And the problem is not they're not doing what we want them to do. The problem is our having so much judgment and expectations. Okay. Because our spiritual mentor teaches us how to purify our negativities, we will exhaust destructive karma that would have ripened in lengthy, unfortunate rebirths. It may instead ripen in this life as comparatively mild discomfort or harm. So whenever you feel, sick in this lifetime, think, this is my negative karma ripening. Yeah. And it's not ripening in a hellish rebirth. It's ripening and not feeling well now. And I can manage not feeling well now, Whereas if we don't think like that, then when we don't feel well, it's like, oh, I feel so sick. Nobody has ever suffered like this. I can't get out of bed. This is terrible. I'm going to die. And then we create an incredible amount of mental suffering that compounds whatever illness or injury we have. Whereas if we think, this is my negative karma ripening, then, well, good. It ripened, it's over, it's done with, and I can handle the situation. It's not that bad. Okay, I'll tell the story of going to see His Holiness the last visit. So, you know, after many, it had been 7 years since, it takes a long time to get an interview with His Holiness. Yeah. So, and, you know, I had questions regarding the series of books to ask him. And so finally gotten some interviews. We got to Dharamsala. We were at this really nice guest house on the backside of the temple. And going, you know, to the office to, you know, you have to check in and everything. So you could, from where we were, you could either walk down some stairs and then walk up a very steep trail, or you could cut through the hole in the barbed wire fence and take a shortcut. So, you know, we'd done that. I was traveling with Venerable Dhamcha at the time. So we'd gone through the hole several times before. So I have my books and computer and everything, and I'm going through the hole in the fence. And then before I knew it, it was kerplunk, you know. And I was holding things, so there was no way I could break my fall. So I landed like this, you know, with my head on the ground and my knees on the ground. Yeah, asphalt. Yeah, it was asphalt. And what had happened is as I was going through the hole, my robe had caught on some of the barbed wire, and I had noticed that. So there I was, kerplunk, you know. And I got up, and we, you know, we didn't have time to go back and get cleaned up, so kept walking, got to the private office. She had some, you know, the wipes. So, you know, kind of cleaned me up, and my knees were bleeding, and, you know, a little bit. My face was all, yeah, I was bleeding up here, too. So, you know, not torrents, but, you know. So we cleaned it up, and, you know, and I thought, oh, you know, I'm going to see His Holiness. Great purification before I see Him. Yeah? I mean, this is what happens. You purify your karma, and then you get to do that. One time before, because this kind of thing happens, you know. When I, one time before, when I had gone to see Ling Rinpoche, afterwards I came back, and I had been perfectly fine. And I felt so nauseous. You know, I was standing outside ready to throw up. I don't think I did. But, you know, and then one time, this is the really good one. Before, you know, I was healthy. And before Ling Rinpoche was giving an empowerment, and before going to the empowerment, I went to the bathroom, and a worm this big came out. I'm going, what the? You know? It's like going on here. And then I went to the empowerment. I had a stool test. Later, there was nothing. You know, I didn't have worms or anything. So, yeah, so. It's a thing, you know, if you see these things as purification, then they become purification. If you see them as, oh, poor me, I'm suffering, then you suffer even more. Okay, another benefit of relying on a spiritual master. Due to the important role our spiritual mentors play in our lives, we will create great merit, more than is created by making offerings to limitless Buddhas. Okay, so this one is harder to understand. Why do we create more merit making offerings to our spiritual mentors than we do offering to limitless Buddhas? I mean, there's nobody higher than the Buddha. And limitless Buddhas, I mean, you would create an incredible amount of merit you know, making offerings and everything. Why spiritual mentors? So this was a question I had for a long time that I pondered. I couldn't make any sense of it. Okay. Then one day we were in Bangalore, and Sakit, yeah, was driving us. I don't know where, the train station or somewhere, maybe to teach somewhere. Anyway, I don't know how this topic came up or why he said this. But at one point he said, who is more important to you? The person who developed, who made up the alphabet, or the person who taught you the alphabet? And it was like very clear, you know, I had no idea who the person who made up the alphabet was. I'd never even thought about that. But the person who taught me the alphabet was really important, because that person was the one who started me, you know, to develop the ability to read. And so at that moment, that's when I understood this. Yeah, that all the limitless Buddhas, their kindness is immense. But the person who actually teaches me the Dharma in that way is kinder than all of those Buddhas. Because without that person who teaches me, you know, there could have been many Buddhas, but I wouldn't have known anything. You know, just like without the person who taught me the alphabet, there could have been, you know, many books to read, but I wouldn't have been able to read any of them. So it's interesting how sometimes you, that in some completely obscure situation, something clicks in your mind and you understand something you didn't understand before. So that's how I made sense of this. Okay, by properly relying on our spiritual mentors in this life, we will meet qualified spiritual mentors in future lives. This is so important. You know, I cannot emphasize that one enough. Yeah. Because if you look around, we've been talking about this a little bit at over lunch, you know, and if you meet spiritual mentors that either teach a wrong path or don't show a good example that fits with your mentality, then you can't practice, or you start practicing the wrong path, or you get involved in behavior that really isn't good for you. Yeah, so who you meet and who you take as your teacher can have a very strong impact. Yeah. And so we always want to pray in, you know, to meet fully qualified teachers. And not only to meet them, but to realize that they are fully qualified teachers. And third, to follow them correctly. Yeah. Because we can meet them, realize they're good teachers, and then do our own trip. Okay? So it's really important to dedicate the merit for that. Because, look at Jim Jones is a really extreme example. You remember Jim Jones, who took his disciples to Central America, was it Costa Rica? And they all took poison? Guyana? Okay. Well, somewhere in Central America. And they all took Guyana's in South America, isn't it? Anyway, he took them somewhere, and they had a place in the jungle, and then they all took poison. Yeah? Spiritual mentor says, take poison, you all take poison, they all died. You know, that's an extreme example. But, you know, if you meet teachers who practice, who don't know the proper path, or who don't practice properly, then you could wound up. I mean, you follow that person, you know? So Nagarjuna talks about that in Precious Garland. He has, I don't think I put that in this book. I should have, because I always think about it. He made the example of a cow, well, a herd of cows that is walking along the edge of a jungle with a cliff above. And you know how cows are. They follow the head cow, you know. No, the head cow guides and everybody else follows. And the other cows don't think of, where am I going? It's just, you know, the head cow's going there, I just follow. And so Nagarjuna was saying, if the head cow, you know, takes the wrong path, going down this steep crevice, or the street, whatever, you know, along the edge of the cliff, you know, or the cow takes a path going into the jungle, all the other cows are going to follow along and they're all going to suffer. Yeah. Either they'll fall, they'll stumble, they'll get bitten by scorpions or, you know, whatever. And so Nagarjuna used that as an example that if we meet a false teacher but we choose to follow that person, then we wind up, you know, going into the jungle or going out the jungle of wrong views or going over the cliff, yeah? And so, you know, it's really important to assess and evaluate and our teachers. And I think to really dedicate merit very strongly to meet fully qualified teachers in the future. Because I don't know about you, but when I first started out, I was so naive. I didn't know anything about anything. You know, and I was so fortunate to really meet very good teachers from the get-go, you know, and I look back on it now and it's totally amazing that I was able to meet those teachers, you know. Yeah, I mean, when you think about how you grew up and the environment you grew up in and this crazy country we live in, excuse me, but you know, how in the world do we manage to meet masters like this? It's truly remarkable. And then, you know, my initial teachers, they sent me to other teachers and referred me to other teachers, and so I have a whole network of really fantastic teachers. And I was like, how did I get that lucky? You know. And I just think, well, I must have made some kind of dedication prayers in a previous life for that. Because otherwise, I certainly didn't create the cause for it in this lifetime. Yeah. My youth was not spent in creating the causes for happiness. Okay? So, you know, very important to do this. So by properly relying on our spiritual mentors in this life, okay, we will create the cause to meet qualified spiritual mentors in future lives. Okay, another benefit, our good qualities will increase and we will accomplish the welfare of ourselves and of others. Accomplishing the welfare of ourselves is attaining the Dharmakaya of the Buddha, the Buddha's omniscient mind. Yeah, accomplishing the welfare of others is attaining the form bodies of the Buddha that can manifest in different aspects to help other sentient beings. Under our teachers' compassionate guidance, we will feel supported and inspired in our practice. So that one, too, is very important because we aren't always able to live close to our teacher, you know. Sometimes we are, sometimes things happen and we can't, yeah. And so it's important while we aren't able to live close to our teacher, or even when we are able to live close to our teacher, to feel supported by our teacher. Sometimes you live close to your teacher and you feel like, my teacher is not supporting me at all. You know, all they're doing is picking on me, pointing out my faults, telling me to wash the toilet better, that I don't wash it well enough. Who do they think they are? I learned to wash the toilet very good. You think I'm making up stories. What? Yeah. Okay. So, you know, when we establish a close relationship in our heart with our spiritual mentors, then we always feel their support. So there's a practice called Guru Yoga, and we do that practice, and we feel connected to our spiritual mentors, even though they aren't there with us at that particular moment. Yeah. And that's important, because at some time we will die, and we don't know what the circumstances will be or who will be around us. And at that time, we need to be able to think of our spiritual mentor and the teachings that we've received. Okay. So all of the benefits come about because we listen with an open mind to teachings from a qualified spiritual mentor and put them into practice. However, if we despise, disdain, or reproach our spiritual mentors, many disadvantages occur. We will have to endure unfortunate rebirths because of the destructive karma we create from insulting or getting angry at them. We will experience harm and illness in this life. Our good qualities will degenerate, and no good qualities will arise because we won't practice the Dharma. In short, none of the advantages will accrue to us while their opposites will. So it's good to go through that list and think of their opposites too. Okay. So the reflection. Imagine your spiritual mentors appearing in the space in front of you and looking at you with kindness. Okay. Then contemplate each advantage of properly relying on a spiritual mentor. And contemplate the disadvantages of not relying on a spiritual mentor, or of improperly relying on one. And conclude with a determination to rely on a spiritual mentor with a pure heart and to follow his or her instructions in a systematic way. Okay? So, not relying on the spiritual mentor means you just, you know, you don't do it. Relying improperly means that you've chosen a spiritual mentor, but then you fight with them, you criticize them, you get mad at them, you just look at them and say, forget it, I'm not going to do what you say. You listen to teachings and then go out to the disco, or, you know, you don't practice, you just, you know, hang around. Okay, so having a very negative attitude towards our spiritual mentor, creates a lot of negative karma, because, yeah, when we do that, we will then not practice what they've taught us. So in addition, just to the karma of, criticizing and disdaining anybody, which is negative karma, by not practicing the teachings that they gave, or by abandoning what we're already practicing because we just think that teacher is full of it, then who loses out? Yeah, who loses out? It's like, I don't like you anymore, so I'm not going to practice what you taught me. Then, yeah, who benefits from that? Who loses out from that? Okay, so you can see it's a way of, shooting ourselves in the foot. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really, I saw that. You know, there was one place where I was going to teach for a while. And the teacher, what he taught was fine, but he himself had some difficulties. Okay? And what I saw is when some of the students saw his personal difficulties, yeah, you could see they were on the edge. Should I continue to practice what he taught me, or should I abandon the practice? Okay? So because they had lost a lot of respect for the person who taught them, they began to doubt the practice, even though what he had taught them was okay. Yeah? And so sometimes they would come to me and say, what do I do? And then I would say, you know, be grateful to him for his kindness in teaching you that. Yeah, if you need to take a step back now and not go to his teachings, that's fine. But don't criticize. But what he taught was okay. And if that helps you, continue to practice it. Why give it up if it's helping you? Okay. But I saw, you know, when they came to me, they were really there like, oh, maybe I should give up Buddhism. And you know, that's really sad when you see that, you know, because the Dharma isn't at fault. It's, you know, it's sentient beings. Imagine that, sentient beings with afflictions. Okay, so now the next section is cultivating trust by seeing their qualities. So remember in the prayer we were reciting last night to Tara, may I follow in thought and action the spiritual mentor. There's that one, but does anybody have it with them? I should have it. I don't have it. I didn't put it in the book. Anyway, it's about cultivating trust and respect in the teacher. Okay? So two qualities. It's okay if you can't find it. Better you sit down and listen. Yeah, we can look it up later. Oh, you have it? Okay.
May I be inspired to follow with devotion in thought and action the spiritual friend who is the source of all accomplishments of goodness. By acquainting my mind with the path pleasing to the victorious ones, may attain peerless awakening.
Yeah. Okay. So we're saying, may I follow in thought and action. Yeah. The spiritual mentor who is the
source of all accomplishments of goodness.
Yeah. Okay. So we rely on our spiritual mentors in two ways, through our thoughts and through our actions. Well, that's what that verse is referring to. Relying on them through our thoughts entails cultivating two attitudes, trust and faith in our mentors, which are developed by reflecting on their good qualities, and appreciation and respect for them, which arise from reflecting on their kindness to us. Okay, so we're going to get into that, you know, we have a division here, relying on thoughts, relying on them through our thoughts, relying on them through our actions. Under relying on them through our thoughts, it's developing appreciation and respect, and then also, developing trust and faith, and then developing appreciation and respect. Okay, you see the outline. So faith moistens our mind and makes it receptive. So here, they usually say faith. I think trust, confidence, faith is a very, it's not the right word, okay? But neither is trust nor confidence. So it's something that kind of has a little aspect of all three of those, okay? So it's not blind faith, but it's an open kind of warm confidence in our heart. That trust somebody because we have seen that we've checked out their good qualities, okay, of them personally and of the teachings that they're giving us. Okay? So this kind of faith or trust energizes us to accomplish our goals. So the Dasabhumika Sutra, the Ten Teachings Sutra, or ten, actually it should be, oh, this is the, not the Ten Grounds, not the Dasabhumika, it's the Dasadhammaka Sutra. It says, faith is the best of vehicles. And here we don't mean blind faith. We mean faith that comes from understanding. Yeah? Faith is the best of vehicles, definitely delivering you into Buddhahood. Therefore, persons of intelligence rely on the guidance of faith. Okay, we usually think of faith as you don't need any intelligence. You just believe. In Buddhism, that's not the case, okay? Here it says, therefore, persons of intelligence rely on the guidance of faith. Yeah? So because we're intelligent, we look at the qualities of someone. We evaluate, you know, we check things out. And then on that basis, that warm kind of feeling of trust and faith arises. Virtues will not arise in those who have no faith, just as green sprouts do not grow from seeds scorched by fire. Okay, so if we have no faith or confidence in the teachings or in the teacher, then we're not going to follow the teachings and we're not going to follow the guidance of the teacher. And so, of course, the virtue arising from that is not going to come about. Because we're not, you know. If you don't put the ingredients together and make the cake, you're not going to get a cake. So it's the same thing. So common faith is faith we have in a particular teacher, although we may not be his or her student at this time. So you may not have met His Holiness the Dalai Lama, but you know, you've read his books or you hear me talk and that generates faith in your mind. It is called common because it is shared by those who are his disciples and those who are not. Yeah, and so there's other people, you may have read their books or heard about them and developed that kind of faith in that way. Uncommon faith is the faith held by a teacher's students. Yeah. With such trust and faith, we feel close to our teachers, which enables them to influence us in constructive ways. Okay, so the uncommon faith is what we have when we know a teacher and we've studied under them and we see the benefit. Okay, and then we let ourselves be influenced by their example and their teaching. So trust is generated by reflecting on our teacher's qualities and the role they play in our lives, which is similar to the role the Buddha would play if he were alive today. So this practice of reflecting on the teacher's qualities and developing faith is done after you decide to take somebody as your teacher. Before you take them as the teacher, you use those qualities, those three sets of qualities, depending if they're a fundamental vehicle teacher, a perfection vehicle teacher, or a Vajrayana teacher. You use those sets of qualities to assess if somebody is a teacher and decide whether to take them as one of your teachers. That's the time you check and you analyze. After you decide somebody's your teacher, then you stop checking and analyzing. Because if you check and analyze, you're going to find that they have one picky fault after another one. Because our mind is very picky. And our mind, at least my mind, is this your mind picky? Yeah? Do you judge people based on, you know, very small things? Yeah? So if we let that mind approach our spiritual mentor, we are going to find so many faults in them, that then our faith in their good qualities will be obscured by the number of picky faults that we find. We are excellent at finding picky faults, or at picking faults. Aren't we? We're pretty good at that, huh? Aren't you? Are you good at that? Yeah? Can you look at everybody in this room and like, oh, I wish they'd part their hair on the other side. I wish they'd wear socks that matched. I wish they, you know, grew their bangs longer. Yeah. We can find fault with everybody. Okay? Yeah? I mean, that's the way our mind is. If we let that mind loose in relationship to our spiritual mentor, after we've already analyzed and checked out that person's qualities and voluntarily, with our own wisdom, taken them as our teacher. If we then start picking at things, we're digging ourselves into a hole. Okay, it's like if you marry somebody, and then after you get married, it's like, this guy leaves his socks on the floor. He doesn't put the cap on the toothpaste, you know, doesn't wash his coffee cup, spills something on the floor and doesn't mop it up, doesn't clean the kitty litter box. Why in the world did I marry this guy? You know? And you start getting judgmental like that. What's that going to do to your marriage? He or she may have fantastic qualities, and that's why you decided to marry them. But now all you're looking at is, you know, they don't clean the kitty litter box on time. Yeah? And they leave their dirty socks on the floor. I mean, this is truly sinful, isn't it? Yeah? We equate that with being sinful. It's just the way people are, isn't it? You know, people are people, not everybody. You know, they put the cups upside down in the cupboard, and I want the cups put upside right in the cupboard. Yeah? That can be the subject of many quarrels in marriage. Okay? And in a student-teacher relationship, too. But, you know, if we focus on these kinds of things, then what's going to happen to our Dharma practice? Okay? So I went through this with one of my teachers, okay? I'm a morning person. I like to get up in the morning. My mind is bright. You know, I do my practice. I'm a morning person. Evening, I'm not so good, okay? I'm tired. Yeah. My teacher is a nighttime person. He gets very, very little sleep. So, and he also doesn't know how he doesn't follow a schedule, okay? So the teachings are advertised at starting at 7 in the evening. So you arrive a little bit before 7. You're prepared to hear the teachings at 7. 8 o'clock comes along. 9 o'clock comes along. This is in the evening. I'm getting tired. 10 o'clock comes along. I'm usually in bed by then. 11 o'clock comes along. Then the teachings start. You know, I can't stay awake. And of course, as one of the oldest nuns, I'm sitting in the front row. And everybody's seeing me. Trying to stay awake during the teachings. Okay? Then, at about 3 o'clock in the morning, the teachings stop, and he starts dedicating the merit. Well, there's a lot of merit to dedicate. So just as you think 3 o'clock, okay, we'll do, you know, chant those two verses. It takes 30 seconds, and then I get to go to bed. Well, we dedicate for the beings in hell, and then we dedicate for the being of the hungry ghost, and we dedicate for the animals. Oh, we dedicate for the human beings, and for the gods, and for the bardo beings, and we dedicate for all the projects in different dharma centers, and we dedicate, you know, all the merit of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, and all the merit of all these different beings, and you dedicate for another hour, and it's now 4 a.m. I usually get up at 4:45, you know. So 45 minutes, and it takes time to, you know, get back to where you're staying and get in bed. And by that time, it's time to get up. For my teacher, it's nothing, you know. He barely sleeps. So he's up and going, and I'm like, so I found it very difficult to maintain a positive attitude. Okay? And I could get so upset, you know. At least, okay, if the teachings aren't going to start until 11, at least say they're going to start at 11. Then at least I could take a nap in the afternoon, maybe, so that I can have some sleep under my belt so I can start the teaching at 11 at night. Who starts teaching at 11 at night? You know, and like, why is he doing this? You know, can't he be like a regular teacher that's, you know, starts teachings on time and doesn't, you know, and has a short dedication prayer, you know, that's at most 10 minutes long, not an hour long, okay? All my other teachers can do that. His Holiness even starts early, and he never goes, you know, beyond, like, the latest he ever teaches is like 3 in the afternoon. Perfect! Yeah, of course he starts a little bit early, but, you know, that's okay. I can manage that. And so I would get, like, so disturbed, you know, like, what's he doing? And, you know, and my mind of, you know, negative comments could really go over it. And then it's just like, you know, as if this were some horrible, evil deed that was going to destroy the Dharma. It wasn't. It's just personal preference. That's all it is personal preference. I prefer in the morning. He prefers in the evening. Sentient beings, you know, I don't know if he's a sentient being. I don't think so. But anyway, you know, beings are different. Duh. You know, why do I have to judge somebody because they're a night person and I'm a morning person? Why do I have to get upset? Why do I have to pick faults? This is just personal preference. That's all. Yeah? Okay, so then you realize, okay, I've got to be really careful with my mind before you can talk yourself into, you know, getting really upset. Or you have another teacher, another one of my teachers. Wonderful teacher. I adore this one. Yeah, he's passed away some years ago. Big, like enormous. And the doctor, you know, told him he should have a better diet. Yeah? And lose some weight and eat more healthy. Because he was having butter tea, you know, Tibetan tea. Butter and salt. Yeah. Great for your cholesterol level. Great for your blood pressure level. Of course he was getting sick, yeah. And the doctor was telling him, you know, improve your diet. Eat salad. Salad is for rabbits. Yeah. Because in Tibet, you know, they didn't have salad. And if you had any green leaves, that's what the rabbits ate. We don't eat salad. You know, we have butter tea. And as much as we would talk to him and try and encourage him, please, please, stop with the butter tea and, you know, eat a healthy diet. No. So you could look at this and say, you know, your negative mind, our picky mind, could really go ballistic with this one, couldn't it? He gives us advice about what to practice and abandon. And now we're giving him advice on what to practice and abandon to stay healthy. And he doesn't follow our diet suggestions and the diet suggestions of the doctor. You know, if you don't follow the doctor, you're not going to get well. That's what he told us in teachings and why we should follow his teachings. And he's not following the doctor's orders. We could really get, you know, big on this one, couldn't we? Yeah. I mean, isn't it a major thing to drink Tibetan tea? That's almost akin to killing somebody, you know. Like, how dare he do that? Uh-huh. So again, you know, our mind could go completely ballistic criticizing somebody. I heard of another teacher. He's not one of my teachers. But he was on dialysis. He had kidney problems. Yeah? And his students would try and get him to eat a healthy diet. Again, he was used to, you know, Tibetan food. Forget it. He said, if I'm going to be sick, at least I'm going to enjoy what I eat. And then he took the kidney dialysis machine. Apparently, they have a portable one with him now. And he took it on the plane with him because he would travel a lot, going here and there to teach at his various centers with his kidney dialysis machine. Okay. We could get really critical about that one, too, couldn't we? We want our teacher to live long. Look what he's doing. You know, his students tried so hard, he wouldn't budge. Huh? But are we going to, you know, spend our time criticizing him for that and wasting the time we have to study the teachings that we're getting? Yeah. Are we going to let our picky, judgmental mind go ballistic on, you know, what our teachers eat? Okay, so this is something to really watch with ourselves, okay? And the thing is, if we can learn to put the damper on our judgmental, critical mind regarding our teacher, then it's very good practice for putting the damper on that same mind regarding other sentient beings. And the more we can subdue that judgmental, critical mind, the happier we're going to be. And the more time we'll have to do other things besides sit there and ruminate on other people's faults. Okay? So it's really something to think about. Okay, so trust is generated. Oh, we better stop. Okay, so there's time for maybe for a few questions.
This isn't really a question, but it was a thought I had of your spiritual, finding a good spiritual teacher. A good spiritual teacher will really praise and recommend their teachers, whereas a not good qualified teacher will just say, oh, I'm the one who you should listen to and not recommend anyone else.
Right, don't listen to anybody else. Yeah.
How should we practice if someone else criticizes one of our spiritual teachers and we hear that?
Just ignore it. Yeah. Just ignore it. Or if you have information, you know, maybe that person is criticizing something because they have wrong information or they don't know the teacher very well, then you could give them correct information that you have, either from your personal observation or from what you know about the teacher. Yeah. But if somebody else criticizes, there's a million different opinions in this world. Are we going to take to heart all of them? You know? So you just, let it go. Yeah. Although I have to qualify this, if somebody is making an accusation that a teacher did something that is definitely immoral, okay, then ask that person for evidence. You know, because if somebody is doing something immoral or unethical, then we should follow up on that, figure out what's going on. But if it's just somebody, we can see through the national discourse and our tweeter in chief that people say anything that comes to their mind and make all sorts of accusations which are unfounded. So if the person is saying something, and the person who's saying it often exaggerates and makes unfounded accusations about, and they're accusing somebody of doing something that is unethical, then just completely ignore it, because that person is telling you more about their own bad character for making false allegations. Yeah. But if it's somebody you trust saying that, then you have to ask them, okay, where did you hear that? What evidence do you have? Yeah. And if they say, well, I heard it from so-and-so, then you say, who did so-and-so hear it from? How does so-and-so have that information? And I don't know about you, but when I hear these things, I heard this from so-and-so. Oh, well, who's so-and-so? Well, I can't tell you because it was told to me in confidence. You can't tell me who told you that? Can you at least tell me how that person knows? No, I can't tell you that either. I personally speaking, I cannot live with that kind of... there's no way I can make a determination if somebody can't provide evidence. Okay? I mean, it's kind of like what's going on now. We had a whistleblower. Yeah, I can understand the whistleblower not, for their own safety, they don't want to be publicly known, okay? That's one thing. For us, people who are telling us the gossip, they don't, why are they keeping it secret, who it is? In any case, you have a whistleblower, but then you do an investigation and you see if the whistleblower was blowing an actual whistle or blowing one of those party favors, Remember those kind of you blow and they go out and come in? Yeah? So, what do you call those? Anyway, you ask for information. Yeah? Hmm? Party favors, okay. So you ask for information. But if it's what you can tell is like, well, I just heard it on the grapevine and so-and-so said this and that, and it's about something unethical, I need more than rumor. Okay. If it's somebody just telling you some kind of story that they heard from somebody or that they saw but they misinterpreted, just forget it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is it necessary to formalize the student-teacher connection by, say, going to the teacher and formally requesting to become that teacher's student? Or can you consider yourself to be relying on a spiritual mentor just by simply following the teachings that you've read in books or from someone who you've gone to see teachings of?
Yeah. I think, personally speaking, I think just reading books... it's a good way to start, but there's something that happens when you are with a live human being. Yeah. So I think it better to really wait until you've met somebody before thinking that they're my spiritual teacher. It's fine to think their books are fantastic, and I really respect them, you know, and I can follow and practice the teachings in the book. But wait until, you know, that's not sufficient, yeah? In this computer age where we do everything in a 4x6 dimension, I think we have to meet real human beings. Okay, having met a real human being and wanting to make that connection, you can either take refuge or, you know, in precepts with them that will formalize it, or you can, you know, request them to become your teacher, or you can do like I did. I just kept showing up, you know, and then I took refuge, you know. But I didn't know at that time that refuge formalized it.
Mm-hmm. You made reference to something called guru yoga, and that's a term I'm unfamiliar with. Could you please explain?
Okay, guru yoga is a practice where we think that the mind of our spiritual master and the mind of the Buddha are the same. Okay? And so and this is in the way because of what I said before, because it's the spiritual mentor who passes the Buddha's teachings on to us. And so, especially if you don't live with your teacher, if you think, you know, my teacher's mind and the Buddha's mind are the same, and what my teacher is teaching me is exactly what the Buddha would teach me if the Buddha were here. Yeah. Then there's a whole visualization that you do, like, of the Buddha and thinking that it's, you know, it's your spiritual mentor and the Buddha together. And then you offer the seven in prayer and mandala, and you make requests like you do in the morning meditation here. Yeah, but you do it with that mindset of thinking that the Buddha and your spiritual mentor are united. Okay? Yeah. And so that's a very nice way for really feeling close to your teacher and feeling inspired. And then in the Guru Yoga practice, we imagine the Buddha coming on top of our head like you do and dissolving into you and so on. Okay, this will be the last question.
The statement about making offerings to your spiritual mentor, you gain more merit than making offerings to limitless Buddhas. Mm-hmm. I was thinking that making offerings to Buddhas is a bit abstract, and so it may not really resonate at a very deep level, but our spiritual mentor is an actual human being who we can perceive here and now. So it probably affects our mind at a deeper level if it's with a living being as opposed to just some notion of Buddhas somewhere out there.
Yeah. I think especially for us who are, you know, a lot of our time and energy is regarding sense objects and things that are, you know, in front of us. Yeah, I think that can make a more positive impact. I did hear a story about one lama who, and this is showing what happens when your mind is very highly spiritually developed, okay? But he was very ill in the hospital, and he was sleeping, you know, kind of woke up from the sleep, and his attendant was in the room, and he said, "There's Buddhas all around. Quick, get some offerings. I want to make some offerings to them." Yeah? So this was his, you know, gut reaction to seeing a lot of Buddhas. First thing, you know, I got to make offerings. And it was somebody who was whose mind was very well trained, so done a lot of visualization, data yoga practice, all this kind of stuff. And so, you know, he arose from his illness, you know, or stupor of the illness, and saw Buddhas. Great. Yeah. Okay, let's dedicate.